Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of August 23rd, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good. Good to have you here. So, D.R., there's a fair amount of interest in something the Trump administration or maladministration has proposed this last couple of days. So let me set it up and then we can talk about it. I believe in the year 2008, Massachusetts, as one of a coalition of states, took to the Supreme Court a question about whether or not carbon dioxide was actually a pollutant. It turns out that under the Clean Air Act from the 1970s, carbon dioxide is not considered a pollutant because, of course, people breathe it in and out. I mean, it's a ubiquitous gas. Unclear. Anyway, in a famous ruling called Massachusetts versus EPA, the Supreme Court said that, in fact, carbon dioxide is a pollutant and the EPA has to regulate it. So that was 2008. So what followed on with the arrival of President Obama, the EPA undertook something called the endangerment finding, which basically is a legal process by which the EPA presents data and makes a declaration that a certain thing is a danger, and carbon dioxide was found to present an endangerment. And once that legal document was made, then the EPA was required to regulate carbon dioxide. Right, so there's this legal chain that the EPA is forced by law to make regulation of carbon dioxide. So during the Obama years, that went around and around and around. But it culminated in something called the Clean Power Plan, I guess, that was released late in the Obama tenure. Because of the nature of carbon pollution, the Obama EPA made an effort to essentially employ what amounted to kind of a cap-and-trade policy wrapped up inside the EPA regulation. But kind of the cornerstone of the idea was that the EPA would regulate the emissions not necessarily directly out of the stack of a coal plant, but out of the combined area of a state. So a very subtle, nuanced kind of difference, because in the past, the EPA would always measure how much junk came out of your smokestack, and that was the thing they looked at. And under the Obama proposal, it was a much more nuanced kind of thing they were looking at. The Obama Clean Power Plan was quickly challenged by many red attorney states general, and the Obama was put on hold basically by Justice Antonin Scalia before he checked out late in 2016 or 15, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the setup, right? There's this long and ongoing thing where the Obama Clean Power Proposal, which would have cut carbon dioxide pollution by 30% by the year 2030, primarily through the retirement of coal plants, was on the books, but on hold until our new fearless leader was elected in 2016. And I'll let you say what kind of things Trump said during the campaign about coal, right? Clean, beautiful coal. But that's the setup. So here we are. Now it's a Tuesday in late August down in the EPA headquarters. Tell me, DR, can I ask you to give us a description of what happened at the EPA headquarters and where we are now?
Well, the Trump administration and EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler, they've basically proposed replacing the Clean Power Plan with what I call the Mean Power Plan, which will effectively allow states to decide what level of emissions regulation to set from power plants, or even if they even want to bother basically setting emissions regulation from power plants. And in one of the most controversial aspects of this new rule, the Trump administration is basically admitting, according to the New York Times, that the new policy, if implemented, quote, could lead to as many as 1,400 premature deaths annually by 2030 and up to 15,000 new cases of upper respiratory problems, because the Clean Power Plan not only regulated CO2, it also regulated other forms of air pollution. And with this sort of hyper-libertarian laissez-faire approach to emissions regulation, dirty power plants can in certain states basically keep on operating full and free and continue to sicken and kill people.
Right. I think the new regulations proposed by the Trump administration basically lower, I suppose it goes the opposite, raises the amount of pollution that can be put out of a plant. And of course, they're very proud to be very specifically only the material that comes out of the smokestack of a coal plant. But the intent of the regulation is to allow coal plants to remain in operation, right? Make it easier for these coal plants. That's why Trump digs coal, right? I mean, it's all about this. His obsession with coal. But they want to keep the coal plants alive, and because of the associated particles and stuff and soot that come out of burning coal, you get the asthma deaths, right? And they seem to be quite at peace with that. I think that the plan is there's lots of issues with the plan, right? I mean, but the idea that they would accept 1,400 deaths, they're basically trying to allow the coal plants to stay alive. It's so wrong-headed that there's going to be legal action, right? Have you heard anything about potential legal action against the Trump administration's plan here?
Yes, it has been reported, I believe, by the Washington Post that a number of Democratic attorneys general, I presume that our Maura Healey will be among them, that are planning to mount a legal challenge to this rule. It'll be interesting to see how long the legal challenge takes. Inside Climate News notes that this legal challenge, quote, this legal challenge will go on for several years, possibly well after the end of Trump's first term. Obviously, it remains to be seen if there is a change of administrations in 2021, whether this rule will be withdrawn and a new, stronger rule will be implemented, will be proposed by a new president. And again, it just sort of goes to show a number of things. Number one, that elections have consequences, and number two, the importance of the courts, because let's assume that. Trump has a second term. Let's assume that, for example, Brett Kavanaugh is installed on the Supreme Court. And let's say Trump has one or two new Supreme Court justices on the court by the time the mean power plan, the legal challenge goes to that court. You could theoretically end up with the Supreme Court effectively saying, hey, this is fine. This is wonderful. And then you have a situation where, again, you know, what sort of regulation, what sort of limits can there be on carbon pollution, other forms of air pollution from power plants? It's a very, very dystopian vision about.
And I guess I suppose the limits, the potential limits on coal power plants, from what I've read, are, and what we've talked about before in the show, is that the limits on operation of dirty coal are essentially market driven. That in the current environment where natural gas is, for better or worse, cheap, and the cost of renewable energy is dropping like a rock. It's just not attractive to build more coal plants. So the idea that somehow the Trump rules are going to unleash a whole bunch of new coal-fired power plants to be built is not realistic. It may keep a few older plants alive for longer, which is bad, but it's not likely to change the fate of coal, which is determined by factors outside of what Trump can change, right? Have you seen anything that says that kind of analysis?
Yes, there is an analysis that market forces will continue to, you know, be a dominant factor in the phasing out of coal. That's not going to resurrect coal jobs. But it also goes to show, and I think David Roberts has pointed this out too, you know, this whole idea that when for years and years and years, whenever you know there was any effort to push clean energy, people of Trump's ideological ilk would say that the government should not be picking winners and losers.
Yes.
Now, what the government is trying to do is trying to rig the game to I mean this is quite literally a rigged witch hunt against clean energy. If you think about it.
Yeah. No. I mean that's back to the hypocrisy of these guys. They're all for principles when their principles agree with what they want, but when their principles don't support what they want, they want what they want, and the heck with the principles. So, well, so there you go. I mean, the president's dystopian power plan, I think it's called the Affordable Power Plan or something.
The Affordable Clean Energy Rule, perhaps the most Orwell. I mean, people thought it was bad when Bush would talk about the Healthy Skies Initiative and the Clean Forests Initiative, but this is worse.
Affordable Clean Energy, yeah, it's a terrible plan. We can only hope that it stays tied up in courts for a long time. Of course, problem is that by not winning, you're losing, right? The longer we don't take action, and as this stuff messes around in court, is not a good thing for the climate, which brings us to our next to a second topic, is that in the city of Boston. So here's the context for this. In the city of Boston, about a year ago now, almost a year ago, the city council agreed that the city of Boston should participate or set up an aggregation plan by which the city would contract, the city of Boston would contract to buy all the electricity that came into the city. This is a mechanism that's allowed under state law. So if the city of Boston were to buy all the power, it would then have purchasing power to go out and get the cheapest power, number one, and secondly, to enforce a level of clean, a mixture of that. It was part of that power they bought. There would some of it would have to be clean. And ultimately, it could all be clean because the city would require it. So the city council passed that bill. It moved to the mayor's office, where it found a file cabinet to sit in for a long time. And so it went for something like 6 or 8 months with not much happening. And of course, climate activists were pressuring Marty Walsh to do something about the vote and the approval that had been given by the city council to push forward on the plan to have community aggregation, as it's called, of the power purchases for the city of Boston. So, DR, again, let me serve that one up to you. What happened this past week in terms of the city of Boston community aggregation plan?
Well, according to Universal Hub, Mayor Marty Walsh has announced that the city of Boston is going to solicit bids to hire a consultant to develop what's known as a municipal electricity aggregation program that would allow the buying of clean energy in bulk. According to Universal Hub, residents of the city of Boston will get a chance to review and comment on the proposal before the city moves forward, and the plan would also require state approval. Now, if that means the approval of the state legislature, considering what just happened with the state legislature and how it basically sabotaged the clean energy bill, that's not a hopeful sign, now, is it?
But I think that the whole idea that the city of Boston is pushing ahead to try to get cleaner energy under the community energy aggregation idea, that is a hopeful sign, and it is something to point at when we see the malfeasance coming out of Washington as far as this affordable clean power plan goes. Whatever they want to do, the city of Boston is pushing ahead and making itself greener and cleaner, and that's a good thing, and that's a place, I guess it speaks to the whole question of why MCAN exists, right, is to help local communities improve their clean energy portfolio, and that's a good thing. So there you go. I guess the other topic that I thought would be useful to touch on is from a guy named Paul Krugman of the New York Times. Now, Paul Krugman, if my memory serves correctly, won a Nobel Prize in economics. Right? Yeah, he's a Nobelman, right?
So yeah, I believe so, yes.
Paul Krugman of Princeton. And of course, he's kind of a person who occupies something on the progressive side of the liberal spectrum. He writes an article for the New York Times, regular opinion piece in the New York Times. And of course, when Rudolph, I saw a cartoon that said it was Rudolph Giuliani. You know, they're dressing up as Giuliani for Halloween. Rudolph Giuliani made this amazing statement, which I'll just say. He said, truth is not truth. And we'll just leave that there. He said that. Paul Krugman got himself into a lather about that. And tell me, dear, let me ask you to tell our listeners, if they didn't get a chance to read the New York Times, what did Paul Krugman say about Terrible Rudy and his misstatement?
Krugman connected the dots between the philosophy articulated by Giuliani that truth isn't truth and the arguments made by climate change deniers who claim that science isn't science. And he also connected the dots between people in Trump's inner circle claiming that the evidence of collusion with Russia is a hoax and those in Trump's ideological kinship that say that the evidence of human-caused climate change is also a hoax. Mm-hmm. It was a brilliant comment, but if anything, there was another aspect of this that I thought Krugman should have connected the dots with, and the galling irony of the Trumpification of the party that Giuliani belongs to, because it was about a decade or so ago that Giuliani was one of the few Republicans when he was running for president who said we need to do something about climate change. Hmm. And now he's muttering the same rhetoric that you see out of the climate change deniers. It's very similar to how 7 years ago, right around this time, 7 years ago, John Huntsman, when he was running for the Republican presidential nomination, said we've got to do something about climate change. And now you see John Huntsman, the U.S. ambassador to Russia, obviously having reversed now that he's gladly willing to serve one fossil fuel obsessed guy, you know, as the ambassador to another fossil fuel obsessed guy. So it just goes to show you how the ideology of Trump has overridden everything in that party.
Right. And not to go down that path too far, but I think that the Trump is an opportunist in the sense that the party was ripe for this kind of takeover. And I think this is what Krugman is making. The party has long denied science, denied reality on a variety of issues, not just necessarily climate change, but just denied the reality of their eyes. And they were just sitting there, and all Trump had to do was kind of give it a little tiny push, and it collapsed at his feet, right? But it was they were dying for this kind of Trumpism all along. And so I don't give Trump much credit. Trump is only an accident of history. He happened to be the guy who came along and was able to take over the party. But it's not because he's brilliant. It's because the party dug itself a hole. Don't get me wound up. Yeah, I don't want to get all wound up about that again. Anyway, I guess there you go. Read the Krugman article. It's quite interesting. It's a good read. He's a good writer, and he'll make you think. So I tell you what, we will put up a link to the Krugman article and some other stuff at the blog. It'll be at massclimateaction.org/blog. Of course, you can find a link to this show in the blog on our Facebook page at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher and all the other typical podcast apps. So we're going to close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, DR, thank you for your wisdom this week.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.